You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. Giving it to you one day earlier, this is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports. Joining me as always is Joseph.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
And we're here to talk some Utah youth sports. I said sports because we actually have a segment planned all for running Utes.
That's right. We are no longer in the football season, so it's time to start talking about other stuff. And we aim to deliver on our promise to give you an episode every single week.
Donations are accepted.
Yes.
So, all right, let's get with our quick hitters. And first up, as always, we're going to review what happened in the Pac-12 this last weekend. And first up on mine is our Friday night game, which was Cal versus UCLA. A closer one that UCLA ended up winning by 3 points. So, I mean, do you have any takeaways? I mean, I wasn't all that interested and I was out of town, so I didn't care.
I was rooting for Cal. It was a pretty good game. I like Cal. I like their fans. I like that they're not in the South. But whatever. Kind of the same team. I don't know. The Bear Bowl, I think they were calling it, because one's the Bruins, one's the Bears. But I don't know. You know,
we'll see what happens.
From California, they played. One of them won. The other one lost. They're both kind of not great this year.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Then we had Stanford taking on Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame was favored in this game, even though they were on the road. But Stanford whooped them.
And it was beautiful.
It was amazing and necessary, because there needs to be some energy around the Pac-12 coming into the end of the regular season. The Pac-12 doesn't have a New Year's Six tie-in this year, because the Rose Bowl is one of the playoff teams. So whereas most years when you've got a Rose Bowl and then an at-large team, the Pac-12 is going to have to earn two at-large spots. And I think that Stanford's victory over Notre Dame has paved the way for that, especially in such convincing fashion. It was a good season for the Irish, but they tend to fall short of their expectations every year, and this year is no different.
Well, it's kind of crazy. They got up to they were a top 10 team, and Stanford just smoked them.
Yeah.
And it just shows me that they were way overrated, which is Notre Dame on
That's
on
Notre
history.
Dame. Overrated every single time.
Well, a more dud of a game is the next one, which was a game I was looking forward to, Washington State, Washington, the Apple Cup, I believe it is, number 13 versus number 17. Yeah, non-starter, Washington kills them.
Yeah, Washington State, Mike Leach, I mean, so I'm all about efficiency, right? And everybody talks about Washington State and this great offense. They have it, all the yards they put up. But if you start to look at the per-play numbers, it's a problem. They're not that great. They're good. They do really well, but they're not amazing. And what you get is you get so many passing attempts and so many plays they run, and that's an opportunity for a lot of explosive plays, but it's also an opportunity for a lot of mistakes. And in this case, Luke Falk had 3 interceptions. And when you throw 55 passes, you're going to have games like that, and it's not a... It's a strategy where you're going to always be competitive, where you're going to win a lot of games, but it's not a strategy that's likely to get you sort of to the promised land of an 11-1, 12-0 season, because you're going to have down games. You have such a large sample size, you're going to regress to the mean, you're going to have big mistakes that are going to cause swing plays, and then you're going to start pressing just like Washington State did. They didn't score a single point until the fourth quarter. It was a total shellac.
Yeah. And as a Utah fan, the most frustrating part is that the Utes should have beat both those teams.
Both of them. They should be 8-4 and 9-3, and the Utes should be better. And they are better.
8-4.
Yeah.
That would have been the math. 6 plus 2.
Whoa, man.
Stats are getting a little hard for you.
Grant, the mathematical expert here today, is adding 6 and 2 together for us.
Hey, so just helping you out.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Next was, this was an exciting game to watch. The, I can't remember what they call it. Arizona plays Arizona State. They hate each other.
Graham's out.
I watched the first about quarter and a half of this game, and then I turned it off because I was like, oh, Khalil Tate is just going to run all over these guys and destroy them. And then I checked the score, and Arizona State, they put up 21 in the third quarter, and they won the game.
And look and who think, had
Khalil
the most...
Tate go down injured?
I am not sure, but I do know that I was expecting to see Khalil Tate in the top performers on ESPN.
And he's not there?
And he's not there at all. And the one that I liked the most is 22 carries for 165 yards and 2 TDs by DeMario Richard.
Yeah, he's Woo. Good. He's a good player. Nice 63-yard run on his stat sheet there. I'm seeing Brandon Dawkins had 8 passing attempts, so it looks like Khalil Tate went out at some point. And Arizona's just not the same team with him. One of the things that I've really liked watching Utah this year is how resilient they are in the face of an injury to Huntley. The offense seems to be able to rely on the talents of other players, and it's not just a Huntley-driven offense. Troy Taylor is doing things right. Zach Moss is doing things right. We'll talk about that more. And so the offense is still good, and I think Arizona doesn't have that. With Khalil Tate's either not on or not playing, the offense is not good. And that doomed the Wildcats. But then, and we'll talk about this more later too, it was the winning coach who got himself fired. Rich Rod still has a job.
Arizona State just wanted to break the trend, you know, lose the alma mater, fire the coach. Or not the alma mater, the
rivalry game. Hate week.
The rivalry, yeah. And he bucked the trend, but whatever. I don't know. He has a winning season, beats the rival. They're going to go to a bowl game, and they're asking him to coach the bowl game.
Yeah, that's not going to be awkward at all. Go get that 8th win. And don't let the door hit you the way out. That's
for real. Gonna go well, sure. Let's talk about a game that needs no analysis.
Oh, God. No, let's spend about 5 seconds.
Oregon beats Oregon State 69-10.
The end.
All right, so on to our becoming one of our favorite segments, the Kyle Kuzma watch. What's the Kuz up to?
We need a drop. We need it to be like, Kyle, Kuzma watch. How was that? Can we cut that and put it in next time?
Let's hold that thought. Maybe come back to that another time.
Kyle Kuzma, our boy Kuz, has lost his starting job. The power forward who got injured, and he took over the starting responsibilities. And in the time that he was out, was averaging, I think, 18 points per game around there, 7 rebounds. Apparently they're not good enough for the Lakers, and this other guy, whose name I don't even know, is going to take back over. We'll see how long that lasts. He's been having good, very, very consistent, which has been nice to see. But the three-pointers have been falling, which was what he needs to do in his stretch four role. Hasn't scored below 15 points in the last week. Beat Grant's Chicago Bulls by 9.
I don't want to talk about it.
On the back of a 22-point. Well, now we have to talk about it. 5 assists.
My Bulls suck. They're trying
to... He was 4-for-7 from the 3-point.
They're trying to tank. It's a bad year.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, I mean, I will just point out to you, and you know, you saw his minutes drop, right? Who's going steady in that mid-30s minute count, and then the last game drops to 20. That's that bench role, and yet he's still producing. So hopefully being the sixth man off the bench at that stretch four is not that big of a drop-off.
And maybe that they can, by cutting down on his minutes, he'll be cutting down on bad shots, only taking good shots, and improve his efficiency a little bit. But he's a good player. He should be on
either way, court, you know, as possible. We started doing this because of a certain player that played in Happy Valley, or Utah County, as it's been called.
Yes.
And
got an insane amount of coverage.
I think this Kyle Kuzma guy has a better NBA career
already.
Yeah.
To date, he's played in, oh gosh, 20 games.
Yeah.
And I would say he's definitely got a better NBA
games,
career
averaging 30
than
minutes.
James, quote unquote, Jimmer Fredette. Is his name actually Jimmer? I sure hope not. It's James.
I have no idea. All I know is he plays amazing in China.
He's great if nobody plays defense, and he's not too small.
I feel like I could have a career in China, maybe. I'm tall enough.
Probably not.
I can box them out.
They're pretty good.
You sure?
Yeah.
I mean, All right.
What's next?
Well, there's a Pac-12 title game. USC is playing Stanford, who they've already beat the crap out of earlier this season.
Let me pull
so, that. I mean, I'm not interested in the Pac-12 title game. I'll probably watch it, but
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's got the makings of a good game. It sounds like you're sort of thinking just a repeat of
September. USC wins. Stanford is meh this year to me.
I don't know. I mean, Stanford, I don't usually do this because I don't think teams change that much, but I think Stanford realized what they had in Bryce Love a little bit later. Not in terms of knowing that he was the starting running back, but in terms of saying, we are just going to run this whole offense through this guy because he's too amazing. They lost, two of their losses came in the first three games. They lost by 3 to San Diego State.
In the rain.
In the rain. They lost
the power
by
18
to USC at home. And I believe that the... Let me check here. So this is going to be in Levi Stadium, Santa Clara. So it's a Stanford home game, despite the fact that they have a slightly worse record. And that's not going to swing it, but I think that the 42-24 result was an outlier, and I'm actually going to pick Stanford to take down the Trojans here, which I also think is the best result for the Pac-12. I think that's probably the best way to get two at-large bids to the New Year's Six and open up even more bowl opportunities for the rest of the league, although the league is stacked with bowl eligible teams. There's 9 of them.
It's impressive.
And, well, isn't it? Is it? Because most of them are 7-5.
No, I mean, look, the Pac-12 beat up on itself. It's not great.
It's that 9-game schedule.
There's a ton of parity. And yeah, I wish they could. Ultimately, I saw someone say, look, let's just go to an 8-team playoff. Each, you know, P5 gets an automatic qualifier. You get a G5 that is up ranked high enough to get an auto qualifier, and then you pull in 2 SEC teams, and everyone's happy, and then the Pac-12 wins a national title. You know, all right, that was a little much, but I would like to see that
next year. Utah national title.
You heard it here.
Talk
first.
About managing expectations.
I'm not managing them. I'm puffing them up. I'm gonna be like a BYU podcaster here. Heisman for Huntley, national championship for the Utes. Troy Taylor becomes, I don't know, NCAA director and cleans up.
Just please don't say you're making Quest for Perfection shirts.
Quest for Perfection.
Oh,
I
my
think that's
gosh.
It. This, we're going to dub the season Quest for Protection. The band of brothers have spirit, tradition, and honor. That's
all on the back of it.
Print out the t-shirts, Grant. We're good to go.
He is wearing blue today, and it's rubbing
off. I got
a
rough tie on.
Well, let's talk some football. A football game did happen. The Colorado game, which...
Awesome football game. It was so entertaining. I haven't had that much fun watching a game in a long time.
I lost interest.
Well, it was boring in the sense of not being competitive, but it was everything we hoped for.
You mean Zach Moss can run the ball?
He sure can.
The offensive line can do their job?
I've got to crunch up some numbers and see if it's really that big of a difference between Williams and Huntley under center. It sure feels like Zach Moss is a totally different running back without Huntley.
Well, it's because Williams isn't going to run it that much.
And he knows he's getting the ball.
Yeah, so he knows, and he's like, yeah, it's a different mindset.
So let me ask, do you feel like that is a Troy Taylor problem, that he's not calling design Zach Moss plays? Do you feel like that is a Tyler Huntley problem, that he's holding on to the exchange too long or choosing to keep when he should be giving it? Or do you feel like it's a Zach Moss problem and he should be running as if he has the ball every single time? And so, you can't say it's all of those things and it's a balance, even though that's probably right. You
have can I use pick. A different answer? Yes. I think it's a darn run-pass option.
So you think it's Troy Taylor?
Yes. Yeah. Like I guess it's Troy Taylor. I will say this, though. I think Huntley's trying to make a read, and he makes the right read a lot of the time. The
My
problem
film
is,
study, he makes the right read as much as anybody.
Yeah. So if he's making the right read, that's great. But I feel like Zach Moss doesn't know whether he's getting the ball, so he's not getting that steam that he needs to run over that first tackler.
But can't he run like that anyway?
Well, no, because Huntley's holding the ball in his chest and hasn't decided whether he's going to take it or not.
We got to get a running back in here and ask them about that. We got
to
find
add that to the to-do list.
Yeah,
but that's White. That to me is what holds Zach Moss back, is that Huntley's holding the ball in it and they're both touching the ball, and then Huntley's making a read, and he's making mostly right reads, which is fine, but it's not giving Zach Moss the ability to attack. I don't feel like Zach Moss has the acceleration to do it, but like Saturday he was running people over and he was breaking two or three tackles a lot of his runs. I mean, it was fun to watch him run the ball.
He hasn't had a game this season like that Colorado game. I mean, he was a top shelf all Pac-12 quality running back in that game, because it was like bowling pins. It was amazing to watch. Nobody could bring him down.
No.
But I'm looking at his numbers and I don't know. I have to do more detailed. I have to go opponent adjustments and look at their averages against running backs. I have work to do to evaluate this, but we'll make it an off-season touch.
Here's your homework for next week. Let's have our Zach Moss stat.
Yeah, let's all dig Pac-12 into Zach Moss.
Or is he meh?
All right.
I like that emoticon apparently today. All right. I mean, is there... So Troy Williams played. He played well. It was a big difference between... I feel like watching him play, it was a big difference between playing in the Colorado game versus any of the other games he played in.
Well, he was really good in the USC game. I think it's easy to forget how well he played in
the Well, maybe he played well. I don't know. I feel like the attitude was there.
That's true. He was raring to go this game in a way. I mean, when he would break a couple tackles and he'd high step into the end zone like that. It was beautiful to see, and it was really nice to see him have so much success. And that being his last game, him being a senior, that was really cool to see. The guy I want to talk about, though, there's two on defense. One is Bradley Anae, who has transformed himself from also ran, you know, space filler defensive end to, honestly, over the last four games, one of the best defensive ends in the entire country. He has just racking up sacks and being so disruptive. He was responsible for that fumble on the Colorado was starting to build up a little momentum. Mathematically, the game was still totally out of reach, but you're starting to get that kind of twisty feeling in your stomach.
Oh, but Twitter was totally having a twisty feeling.
Yes, they were. That's why I stay off Twitter during the games, because I just do the calculations. And I realize, well, there's 15 minutes. It takes 6 minutes to drive. They don't have a chance. But the guy who picked up that fumble is Cody Barton. And I am saying this is your last chance. The Cody Barton train is leaving the station. This is your last opportunity to retract your hot, oh my gosh, he's so terrible. He has no talent. He's so slow. He's not good looking. I don't know. Whatever people were saying about him over the last couple of years, because Cody Barton is going to be a good linebacker for the Utes next year. He was a good linebacker this year. And Utes are recruiting a bunch of guys at linebacker, but I'm doubting that they can beat Cody Barton out because he's good and he's talented.
No, I mean, the last few games, a lot of players, like you point out, Anae, Cody Barton, and I'm blanking, I want to say, is it Donovan Thompson?
Yes, linebacker, number three. Yeah, he's been great.
There's our two starting linebackers right there next year.
Need a little depth, but I feel good about it. I think Chase Hansen is probably going to move up to linebacker. He just keeps getting bigger and stronger, and it's kind of impossible to hold him out of that at this point, I think, or will be by the time he's got another offseason of building up some muscle mass. I really like Devin Lloyd. What's his name? Carson Lillenquist is another guy to watch. He's a little bit smaller. He's a real gym rat. And then there's a gentleman that the Utes are recruiting was on an official visit from. He's a JUCO linebacker. He put up, Hurdle is his name. He put on 40 pounds between being a two-star freshman committed to Western Kentucky. Went to Pima Community College down in Arizona, which is a real D1 factory community college. Had put on 40 pounds and is just a great, great player. And I feel like the vibe that I get is that the Utes are probably in the lead for his services. And he's an instant impact kind of guy that would give Thompson and Martin sort of a run for their money for that starting spot. And maybe allow Hansen to continue to play safety. Although, again, I think physically Hansen is just, he is a linebacker. And as a senior, it's going to be clear that's the position he should play.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, other than that, I mean, game was pretty dominant, under control. So let's talk about a couple coaching changes.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend for this, coaches.
Here's the thing, and I'm going to be the boring take. I don't care. I don't care that Chip Kelly's going to UCLA.
That's my take. Now I have to change my take so that we're more interesting.
Well, I don't know about that. But the Utes are like, I don't care who's coaching. I care who's coaching the Utes. I care about who's playing for the Utes, and I care about what the results are.
So there's no hire in the ASU. They're not going to get a guy who's markedly, notably better than Todd Graham. They're going to get a good coach, just like Todd Graham was. He could be great. He could be bad. He could be a great recruiter. He could make some misses. There's no way to really know. Everybody's super pumped up about Chip Kelly. But Chip Kelly was a great coach almost a decade ago when he was innovating college football, when he was totally changing the way that offenses were run. And now everybody's doing that. And the best defensive coaches have adapted, and in particular Kyle Whittingham has transformed his defensive system so that you no longer see those defenses have the same kind and quality of success that they used to. He's moved to a 4-2-5 where there's almost always a nickelback on the field. He has changed the way that he assigns responsibilities to linebackers so that they're more flexible. The strong safety has a new expanded role that Chase Hansen in particular has excelled at. And the way that he coaches the defensive backs has changed too, where they're no longer pure man, but they've got this man flex to zone in certain reads and certain plays. And all of those changes that have taken place over the last few years have been in response to the high speed, high flexibility, no time to change personnel offenses that Chip Kelly rolled in. And I think that Chip Kelly is going to find a very different ecosystem in which for his offense to work. And it's not that he's not a good coach or he's not going to have a success, because he still has all of the traits that are going to make him a good coach. But I think expecting him to just walk in there and win 11 games next year is a pretty silly expectation. Assuming that Rosen and Darnold both declare for the NFL, I would still pick the Utes to win the Pac-12 South next year, and yep. I think that's still the right choice.
Pac-12 South is going to be wide open.
I mean, Chip Kelly's maybe worth, what, half a win over?
Well, I mean, the players still have to play the game.
Win, but it's not a huge change. It's just not that big a deal.
Yeah.
We make too much of a deal out of this coach or that coach. If his name's not Nick Saban...
Hey, Saban can't even beat his rival when they have a good team.
I would say there's maybe four guys in the entire country, maybe three, that I would say are definitely better coaches than Kyle Whittingham, and Chip Kelly's not one of those guys. And as long as we have the best coach, I don't care how good the other guys.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the running Utes, because, heck, we said we were going to. So we ought to do it. But at this point, 5-1, one loss is to UNLV. And ultimately, I don't know if you watched the game or saw some of the stats, but I chalk that one purely up to, you know, a bad night. Those nights are going to happen.
Well, it was right after they'd had the other game. I mean, yeah, you're not going to win every game.
Yep.
And UNLV is a good team. And that's just how it's going to be. What were your expectations if you were picking these first six games? Would you have picked a 5-1 record? What would you think the record
would be? I would expect about a 5-1 record. Okay. I mean, expecting one loss is not unheard of. But a lot of those games, I totally expected them to win. I mean, what's interesting is going into this season is the media picked Utah to finish 7th in the Pac-12. I feel like they're better than that.
And the Pac-12 is worse.
Yeah.
There have been some – it's been a real upheaval season. Washington State is winning a bunch of games for the first time ever. Arizona State is winning a bunch of games for the first time ever. And Arizona, which is, from a Schadenfreude perspective, is really fun to watch just totally implode. They're losing a bunch of games they shouldn't lose. Something's going on. I mean, we know what's going on, but the
– We do.
The investigation and the scandal, the cloud hanging over Arizona, is having a big impact on their offseason, at least their out-of-conference performance, and they look pretty terrible. They fell from second in the nation to unranked in the last round of AP voting. So yeah, well, that's been interesting, and I think really paves the way for a slightly better-than-expected Utah team to do quite a bit better than seventh.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing I'm excited about. Is the thing that really got me with Utah basketball, especially when Loveridge and Brandon Taylor were with the team and everything, DeLon Wright, is these guys were hustle players. They played defense. They were rough. They stayed in games. And this running Utes team looks like they have players like that.
Yeah.
Bibbins reminds me of Brandon Taylor
a
lot. I'm sure plenty of people have said it. I will add my voice to that. And then Tillman is awesome. I mean, I love what he's saying to the media as well. He's not a scorer. He's willing to do whatever needs to be happening. I mean, he wants the team to be a hustling, you know, like a hungry dog playing. It's the good stuff, and he's going to keep getting more and more minutes because that's how Chris Goviak rolls. He plays players who earn the time. And Tillman is doing that, coming off the bench, whatever. He's great to watch, fun to watch. Bibbins is going to be awesome. I will say this. The one concern I have with the running Utes, and Chris Kowiak mentioned it after the UNLV loss, I believe, is our defending of the rim.
Yeah.
Collette is not that guy. And I don't... know how much of it.
A pretty big. I don't even want to say weakness because Collette's a good player, but he's not Pac-12 good. And when you watch him against better competition, you see him take a big step back. And he's really dominant against lesser opponents. But when there's somebody out there who can handle him, they don't really have trouble handling him.
And that was what the problem with UNLV. I mean, they have that amazing center who went for like 26-17, and he's going to struggle with that. And then we get dependent on our outside shooters, and it just so happened against UNLV, against a hostile crowd, they didn't have it.
Right.
And, you know, missed a bunch of shots. I think we only hit 2 threes in the first half, and those were by Rawson. I will say that. That's been a pleasant surprise. Tyler Rawson's playing a lot better than I would have expected.
I think in general, U fans underrate the kind of role players on Utah's team. A guy who gets a lot of crap, like Cody Barton level of disrespect, is Parker Van Dyke, who's actually a pretty efficient player. And I'm not saying he should, you know, start a point guard on Kentucky, but he's an efficient player who does what he's supposed to do in the time that he's in. And he doesn't get enough time or enough attention. But I like the guy, and I think that when you find space for him, when he finds his way in, it's a good sign for the Utes.
Well, it's a good sign for the Utes because if Van Dyke's playing a lot, they are probably well in control of the game.
See?
And I hate to tell you, Mr. Statman,
I haven't looked.
His player efficiency rating, which is an offensive stat, is pretty bad.
What about last
year? It's 5.6.
What about last year?
I don't have last year in front of me. He didn't play that much. It's not worth it. Like, here's the concerning numbers, though, right? Like, player efficiency rate offensively, obviously, Colette's up there, like, almost 30, which is awesome. Rawson's up there. Chris Seeley's up there, which is great. So is Donnie Tillman. Here are the concerning players. And the biggest concern to me, Cedric Bearfield is ninth on the team. Yet when you look at minutes played, he's playing the third most minutes. And he's one of the least efficient players. And a part of that is turnovers. And I really, really want Cedric Bearfield to clean those up. I mean, we spoke about it last time that the Utes turn the ball over. That's just who they are. But that is something that needs to be cleaned up.
Now, is that a change that you feel like Bearfield needs to make, or is that a change that Krzyzewski needs to make in terms of who's getting the time?
Well, I think it's Bearfield's decision making, honestly. That, you know, that's making a bad pass. It's letting someone pick it off. I mean, you can't average four.
Van Dyke instead. I'm just kidding.
You can't average four turnovers a game. It doesn't work. So, I mean, look, we're getting closer and closer to the Pac-12 play.
Finally.
What's really interesting with the Utes is normally there's like a big spread, and this will be the last thing I kind of mention here. Normally there's a big spread of players getting a bunch of time as Krzyzewski kind of feels things out a little more. This year, not the case.
Yeah.
He's got seven players that are getting the bulk of the minutes, and those are the people getting bulk of the minutes. And it'll be interesting to see as the season goes out how many minutes are out there for people to prove. Like, as I look at it, the person or the two players I see that could increase their bulk of minutes would be Jace Johnson and Chris Seeley. And we'll see what happens. I mean, Seeley had the flu. He's missed two games straight.
Yeah, you
so, you know, we're kind of dealing with some small sample size here, but we're going to get bigger in there. I guess this is interesting, Joseph. I'm the stats guy on basketball. You can be it in football, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I just watch it. Just watching these guys, they run around with a little orange ball.
But look, as we like to close this show, is algorithms.
Vote.
Please go rate our podcast, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Click that 5-star. Tell us what you think. If you can't click that 5-star, email us, DM us on Twitter.
We'll fix it.
UteTalkPodcast, utetalk@gmail.com, and we'll get better with your feedback. So until next week, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.